Welcome to the SureCast, a podcast produced by Bernstein Sure, covering a variety of law, public affairs, and community-related issues of interest. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the firm, and no advice in this podcast should be considered legal advice. If you are in need of legal counseling, please call Bernstein Sure at 207-774-1200. Thank you, and on with the show.
And joining us is Chad Higgins. He's a shareholder at Bernstein Sure. Chad is a seasoned litigator with deep experience advocating for clients in both state and federal courts across the country. He is experienced, very experienced, in products liability, toxic torts, food and beverage litigation, regulatory counseling, FDA, FTC, regulatory compliance. The list goes on. Let's just say this guy is very busy and he has done a ton of work here in the state of Maine and nationally. And Chad, I want to thank you so much for coming on the SureCast.
Thank you so much for having me.
You grew up in Maine in Sebattis. You're a local who has just international experience.
I don't know how much international experience I have. I have been to Canada. But yes,
that puts you right on the map, right there.
There it is.
But you grew up. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and all of that.
So I grew up in Sebattis, Maine, which is next to Lewiston. At the time when I lived there, there's about 3,500 people. We had a blinking light, no stoplight. But now I think there's actually two stoplights in town. So, you know, it's moving on up. Good rural Maine upbringing. Went to a small high school up there. And
did you play sports while you
were
there?
I played football, basketball, and baseball.
Mm-hmm. So you were a three-sport guy.
I was better at basketball than I was at football and baseball.
Okay.
And at baseball, I was a catcher, but I didn't hit very well. So I was a defensive specialist.
Oh, that's good. I like that. And you kind of are today, too. Isn't that interesting?
I am, yes. So yeah. I'm always on defense.
Yeah. Before we get to kind of what you're working on now, I just want to talk about you ended up going to Colby.
I did.
And you studied?
Government.
Government, okay. And then from there, you went to D.C., and you were at Georgetown Law.
I was, yep. Okay. When I graduated from Colby in 97, I moved to Washington, D.C., and I started working at a law firm called Arnold & Porter as a legal assistant. There were 125 legal assistants there at the time. It was a great, great experience. And as you know, D.C. is a fantastic city. And I had an excellent time there as a young adult. And then I went to law school at night at Georgetown, and I kept working at Arnold & Porter during the day.
Wow. And so did you kind of absorb an interest in what you're doing today when you were working during the day in D.C.?
Yeah, I grew up always thinking I wanted to be a lawyer. I wasn't sure what kind or any of the specifics, but when I graduated from college, I thought that I should go and work in a law firm to see what it was they actually did and whether I wanted to do it before I incurred the expense and time of going to law school. So I went to Arnold & Porter and worked as a legal assistant. We worked crazy hours, but it was really, really fun. And so I tell a lot of people who are considering law school that they should go and work in a law firm and see what it's like, to see if they actually want to do it. Because of those 125 kids who started there, probably half of them went to law school and half of them didn't. But I think it was very valuable for all of us, because for those that didn't ultimately go to law school, they realized it wasn't the right thing for them. So they went and they chose some other pursuit, either business school or whatever it is they chose. But I think it was good for them as well.
Yeah, it takes a lot of dedication to go to law school. And I know going to law school at night, I mean, you're working all day long, and then to go to law school at night, that's tough.
It was an interesting experience. And so I've taught a JAN plan at Colby, and it's essentially, so you think you want to go to law school. So you take everything about the first year of law school and condense it down into a one-month course. And one of the things that I tell students when they ask is, you know, should I go to law school at night? And I tell them no, because it fundamentally changes the experience. My days were very regimented. So every day started at 6 a.m. and every day ended at midnight. And I did that for 4 years. It was a bit of a slug. I was ready to be done when it was
done. I bet. But it also trained you to be really dedicated to the profession, I would think.
It really taught me time management, which is an incredibly important thing to have as a lawyer.
I'm just curious. I want to go back a second and find out what was the influence on you, if you don't mind sharing, about why you wanted to become a lawyer?
So I don't really know why I initially got interested in it. I think someone probably said what they say to young argumentative kids, yo, you should be a lawyer, right? Because I talk with my oldest, Molly, and you've met her. She's opinionated, right? And so I think, oh, you'd be great in a courtroom someday, Molly. Somebody probably said that to me, and it stuck. And then when I was a kid, there was a television show called LA Law. And I remember watching it and being like, this is kind of cool. I would want to do that. So when I was in college, I would say, I'm going to move. I know that LA Law was in Los Angeles, but I would tell everybody, when I graduate, I'm going to move to San Diego and work at a law firm. And that's what I thought I was going to do. But then I realized how far San Diego was and that I didn't know anybody there. So I decided to go to DC instead. But I got in my head, I wanted to be a lawyer. And at every turn where I had a chance to kind of have a decision point, I never turned away from it. I always kind of wanted to do it. And I thought I was well prepared to do that.
You know, it's interesting that sometimes people can, there's clarity that people can say, oh my gosh, you know, you would definitely do really well at that. I mean, that's great advice that you received and that you actually followed through with it. What were some of those pieces? You said you were opinionated. What else? I mean, did you feel like, were you a really bright student? Did things come to you easily?
Yeah. So in grade school and in high school, it was a little easier for me than I think others. I did a pretty good job of time management. So, you know, when school would end, I would sit down, I would do my homework, and then I would go to practice. And then at night I was able to do whatever I wanted to. And that just made sense to me. I think that what led me to the practice of law was I always was sort of a peacemaker or a negotiator. Like on the playground, I was the one who would like break up the fight and be like, what's the problem here kind of thing, which is actually a really good skill set as a parent, I find, between my two kids that are, when two of my kids are fighting. But I learned listening, and I think that's important for what we do, because I need to counsel people. I need to hear what they're telling me is the problem. And my job is to help them accomplish what it is that they want to accomplish, not to tell them that they can't. So to help people do that, you have to listen closely. And that was just a skill set that I developed when I was young. I remember distinctly on the playground being, you know, like the moderator or negotiator.
Mm-hmm. Great skills to have, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it served me pretty well. And then part of it is just, you know, your natural personality. So it wasn't something I did. It was just part of who I was. Mm-hmm. Has lent itself to the profession that I'm in.
Goodwin Procter in Boston obviously zeroed in on that, and they saw kind of that you were an up-and-comer after you had been in D.C. Tell me about that next step that you made, because that's a really respectable, huge law firm.
So I was a fourth-year associate at Arnold & Porter, and I wanted to make the move to Boston. I had always wanted to come back to New England, and I had always wanted to come back to Maine. I didn't think it was going to take me 15 years to do it. But Boston was the right next step because I still wanted to live in a city. My girlfriend at the time, now wife, was moving to go to graduate school in Massachusetts. And so it was a good move for me at that point in time. And so I started looking at law firms in Boston. And my criteria was I wanted to replicate the feeling, the culture of Arnold & Porter as best I could in Boston. The legal world in Boston and DC are very different, very, very different. Boston is much more of an old school kind of conservative Puritan type place compared to DC. So I went and I checked out all the best firms, and what I paid most attention to was how I felt in my interactions with people. And Goodwin was the place where I felt most at home. And I really hit it off with the head of litigation, a gentleman named Mark Tully. And so he became a mentor of mine, and he and I still work together to this day. And so I really have a great amount of respect and affection for him. And so when I was deciding between the different firms, Mark was a big determining factor.
You know, it's interesting when I hear you kind of looking at the criteria on which you selected the law firm, that takes a lot of wisdom, and you're not terribly old, you know, at that point. But I mean, really, that you had that vision to say, what's a really good fit and where do I fit in, and how can I not only enhance them, how can they enhance me?
Yeah, so I'm sure someone mentioned that was probably a good thing to look out for, but you spend, at a big law firm, you spend so much time there with everybody, right? You have to be comfortable, because if you're not comfortable and it feels awkward, you're spending 14 hours a day in this place. That's just a miserable existence. And so I wasn't looking for that. I was looking to feel like I had a home, and Goodwin provided that. Arnold and Porter is still like very dear in my heart. It's where I grew up professionally. But Goodwin really was a nice next step for me.
And you learned a lot, and you also made a huge impact there. Let's talk about that. I mean, you were able to further your area of practice and what you were really interested in. And, I kind of want to get into the idea of who are you representing? Because you've really made such a name for yourself in the kind of practice that you do. So let's kind of talk about that. The toxic torts, it's an interesting terminology, and it's exactly as it sounds. I mean, these are big cases that might hurt individuals, companies that claim that they might be hurt.
I might quibble with that a little bit, whether it's going to hurt anybody. But
then do you tell me.
The plaintiffs choose the term toxic torts, and that's what they like to call the practice, but it's what the industry is.
Okay,
is
so called. Tell me what a toxic tort is.
So primarily for me, it's groundwater contamination. So I have represented defendants in a litigation about MTBE, which is a chemical additive in gasoline from the mid-90s to mid-2000s to make gasoline burn more cleanly. But what the industry didn't know is that when gasoline escapes from an underground storage tank, the MTBE. So if you think about gasoline as a cocktail of chemicals, most of them, when they hit the ground, stick to the ground and they stay very local. So it's easy to clean, because what you do is you just dig up the dirt that's contaminated and put in clean dirt and it's done. MTBE runs away. It's hydrophilic. So it goes as fast and as far as groundwater does. So it's a lot more difficult to remediate. So I went from doing products liability work at Arnold and Porter, and that products liability experience was perfect fit for this MTBE case, because the claims that the plaintiffs were bringing were product liability claims. And so I stepped right in, and it was interesting because I started at Goodwin in January of 2007, and I went to trial in an MTBE case in May of 2007.
Wow. So that's quick.
I jumped in 2 feet. I had to take 2 weeks off to take the Mass bar because I hadn't been practicing long enough to waive in. So I had to take the Massachusetts bar and prepare for a trial. It was great, because it was trial by fire, and it was just a great way to sort of hit the ground running.
Wow. And how did the case go?
We won. It was three defendants and three large law firms defending the defendants. And it was in, the case was in Mineola, New York, out on Long Island, and it was a 4-month bench trial. So I really got to know the menu at the Uniondale Marriott very well.
Wow. So you are there every day of those 4 months.
We worked about 18 hours a day, every day. It was a very interesting time.
Wow. That's amazing. So
I got a lot of Marriott points. It was awesome.
I bet you did. Rack those up.
I did. I used them on my honeymoon.
Well, see there.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm sure you were away from her for such a long time. You owed it to her at that point. I guess I'm wondering that's a huge success just so early in your career at Goodwin. It's almost like, how do you top that? You know, there you are just within the first 4 months of being there. That must have just been a huge, you know, anybody who thought about bringing you in, they must have just been saying, hurrah, made the right, great decision here.
So there was a relatively small products liability practice at Goodwin, and I was coming from Arnold & Porter, which is very well known and renowned for its products liability practice. And so a lot of the different people in the products practice at Goodwin were excited to have me start on their team. And as a fourth year, you're kind of operational. You can jump right in and start working on things. And I was already supervising people. And so I was able to take over some teams and start working on a bunch of different cases that were pretty large and significant. So it was a great transition.
What are some of the cases, either current or past, that you're most proud of?
Well, I've handled a couple of really important pro bono cases, and I'm still in the midst of one of them. But I worked on a pro bono case for the New England Innocence Project where we were able to get a man who was convicted of murder exonerated and released from prison. And we also were able to secure a very sizable settlement on his behalf from the state of Vermont for a wrongful conviction.
Wow.
So that's one case that I'm very proud of. And then I've been working for the last 12 years on another New England Innocence Project case for a young man that was wrongly convicted of murder in Boston. And so we're on the precipice of finally arguing the motion for new trial. So that's going to come up in January.
How do you have time for that? I mean, it sounds like you are a fantastically busy attorney.
These are important things, and so it's a labor of love. I believe in this young man, and so I don't really view it as work. I view it as I'm fighting for something that's important. And, I mean, as I say that, it sounds a little hokey, but it is really what I feel about this person. There's no way he did this, and he's been in prison now for 20 years. Could you imagine? I every time I speak to him, I think about just what his... How does he continue to stay positive and keep moving forward? Because I don't know that if I were in the same situation, I would be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So the pro bono work that I've done, I worked on some enemy combatant detainee due process cases when I was at Arnold & Porter as well. So the pro bono work is actually really sort of my favorite stuff. Professionally, for clients, you know, I've been working on this massive MTBE litigation since 2007, and it continues to this day. So, I mean, we've got claims, statewide claims in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Maryland, and we handled a case in New Hampshire and other places across the Northeast. And so that's been a primary part of my practice for the last 12 years.
So somebody says, Chad Higgins, people know who you are.
So... I work in a large joint defense group with the biggest law firms in the country that represent the biggest companies in the world. And I have successfully created some really great relationships in that group. And they operate at a pretty high level. And I sometimes laugh that, you know, a kid from Sebattis, Maine is sitting at the boardroom table with a bunch of people in New York City.
But you've done it.
Yeah. Again, just personality traits that are built in just lends me to operating in that kind of environment well, listening and acknowledging their arguments and then having them listen and acknowledge the arguments that I need to make and the advocacy that I do on behalf of my clients. I've created some really great friendships in that group, and you know, we don't always agree on everything, but I'm always interested when my phone rings and it's one of them calling me for advice. I kind of take that as a point of pride.
Yeah, it's a huge compliment, really. What do you think, aside from, you know, your personality, and I'm just wondering, what might you attribute to Maine? I mean, is there anything that you feel like you kind of, what did you receive maybe from education or from home? Was it a pluck? You know, you think about Mainers, right? And resourceful and really honest and, like you said, hopefully good listeners. But what is it? And maybe talk to us about when people hear that you are a lawyer in Maine, what's the response that you get because you are working with people from all over the country?
The first thing that everybody always asks about is the weather. And I say the weather is just the weather. It's cold in New York City too, right? So it's not really that different. As far as what I got from my upbringing in Maine, the things that people have commented about me is that I'm hardworking and that I'm loyal. And I think that those two characteristics run through a lot of people who grew up in Maine. I loved where I grew up. It wasn't without its flaws, but I loved the upbringing I had in this state. And that's why my wife and I decided to bring our family here so that my kids could have the same upbringing that I had. And she grew up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So she almost was in Maine.
Almost.
She was honorary. She went to high school in Maine. So that was close enough.
That's pretty big.
She's still from away though. Yeah. I keep reminding her.
Most of us are.
Yeah, I know.
From away.
I actually hate that term because I think it's incredibly self-defeating. We need people who want to come and live and work here and raise their families here. It's a great place. It's an absolutely wonderful place. And I'm constantly recruiting people from my professional circle to move here.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what am I going to do for work? I said, I'm doing it. You can do it. There's all kinds of things to do here. Come on in. The water's fine.
And everybody's so plugged in. It kind of doesn't matter where you are anyway.
I mean, I moved back to Maine in 2012 while I was still working at Goodwin. And I worked for Goodwin while I was living in Maine for 6 years. So I tell people they can do whatever they want. So I had to go to Boston, obviously, often, and I travel a lot for my practice. But Portland Airport is fantastic. Get anywhere you need to go. So,
a lot easier than Logan.
Yes.
Say that.
Definitely.
So you've kind of carved out a unique situation in which you're still able to. You had just mentioned that you're still doing some work with Goodwin Proctor, and you're at Bernstein Shore. You've created this wonderful kind of symbiotic relationship, and that's unique. And I guess when I think about that, obviously it's kind of a less expensive venture to have somebody from Portland than it is, you know, with the overhead and everything, hiring somebody in Boston or New York. But they're getting so much more, you're such a bright guy who has all these great relationships, plus you're here in Portland. You know, they're not having to go through the rigmarole of hiring somebody in Boston or New York or DC with all the perks.
Yeah, so it's the same brain. It's just in a different geography. And so my experience from Washington, D.C. and in Boston has helped me become the professional that I am and has given me the experience that I have. And that I'm doing that here, I think, actually is a nice feather in my cap because I've got a fantastic place to live and I'm still practicing at an incredibly high level. When I made the transition from Goodwin to Bernstein Schur, I approached my colleague, Mark Tully, that I mentioned before, who's a friend and a mentor. And I said, we both want to keep working for this client. So I think the right value to the client is that we continue to do that. And I just do it from Bernstein Schur. And to his compliment, he didn't try to fight me or anything like that. We went to the client together and suggested that we continue to work together. And I said, look, the only thing that's going to change is my email address and my telephone number. We're still going to continue to work in the same professional and productive way. And the client they saw the value in that. In fact, the general counsel of our client said, I think it's too good to be true. So, because it's not normally how someone leaves a law firm. So someone who's junior leaves a law firm, they lose the value of what they've put into that person. But we were able to figure out a way to continue that value proposition. Because it was the right value proposition for the clients, for Mark and myself to continue to work together. Mm-hmm. And I think our friendship has enhanced over the last couple of years even, in continuing to work together. So he and I talk on the phone every single day.
It's great collaboration.
It is.
I mean, it's so good to have that willingness and openness to work together.
Well, Goodwin culturally, I have to admire them because they don't let anyone leave on bad terms. And so they view departures as just another door opening, another opportunity. And so when someone leaves, they always facilitate it in a really nice way and continue the relationship. So there's a lot of loyal Goodwin alums out there that continue to work with the firm, and they refer work to me here. It's really great. It was a really nice place to work, and it's been a really great transition.
Tell me about kind of the culture here at Bernstein and what you were able to walk into and maybe why you were drawn to working here.
So same way that I chose Goodwin, I chose Bernstein. When I interviewed with the firms here in Portland, I paid attention to how I felt because I knew I was going to be able to bring work with me and I knew I was going to be able to be successful in the professional part. So I was looking for a culture because I'm, again, spending a lot of time here and I want to like the people that I work with. And my initial interaction here was a meeting with Pat Scully, whom you know, and Joan Fortin, whom you know. And I was like, I can already tell this is going to be my place. It was a great initial interaction. It was a great set of conversations that led up to my choosing to come here. And so between Pat and Joan and then all the people that I met here, I interviewed with a lot of people. Somebody told me in the interview process that Bernstein Sure is annoyingly democratic. So everybody gets a say, which was great because I had an interview in the main conference room here with 18 people. So it was a big U-shaped table and there were 18 people. And I was thinking to myself, what is going on here? I mean, I feel like I was testifying to Congress.
Spotlight.
But it was great. It was a great conversation. People asked questions about my practice and what my plans were and how I thought I was going to be able to manage a transition and things like that. And it was a great conversation, and it just enhanced my feelings about the people that are here. And so I've been here now for almost 2 years, and my decision is confirmed every single day because I work with great people, super smart people who are practicing at a super high level, but are people. And they have, we talk about work, but we talk about other things too, right? So the people on my hallway, I'm talking about their kids and my kids and their hobbies and my hobbies and things like that. So culturally, it was a great fit, and I really have loved my 2 years here.
When clients are looking around to hire you and they think, wow, well, we're looking for a firm that might have some other opportunities as well, you know, what will they find here at Bernstein Sure? You know, I'm just thinking anybody who might be listening to this podcast, what they might find.
We have an incredible broad range of practices here and people. So I've been at two of the biggest law firms in the world, and we have as much talent and breadth of experience here that we can do all the things that the big firms can do. But we know that we're a smaller firm, so we don't try to do things that the big firms need to do. So we can play the role of lead counsel, but we can play the role as a complement counsel as well, or as local counsel, which is great. But we're a full service law firm here. And so when I have a client, so I represent people that make products. So I have a few clients that have body care products. And so I represent them with their Food and Drug Administration work and the Federal Trade Commission work. But we have people here can do their trademark work. And then we have people here that help with their consumer protection issues and customer service issues and making sure that their websites are up to par and that they're complying with international law and local law. So we have a wide palette of services that we can provide to any company. We have tax expertise. We have corporate expertise. We can do anything that the big guys can.
I want to kind of go back a little bit, and I want you to take us into the courtroom because I'm just curious. I mean, courtrooms are so fascinating, and you know, for so many of us, I think we think, wow, what would that be like? It's kind of heady to think about giving kind of that, you know, when you're in the courtroom and just being able to kind of give your all and to be talking to and addressing the jury. And I want you to take us in and tell me Is that the kind of pinnacle for you of what you do? Is that what you love the most? Just take us into the courtroom, and how is Chad Higgins in the courtroom?
I like to advocate, and the courtroom is a great opportunity to do that. And you have to figure out what resonates with your audience. And if the judge is your audience for a particular argument or statement, you might say it in a different way than you would to a jury. You have to understand your audience, and you have to figure out a way to connect with them. And you also have to keep an eye on the fact that they're watching you the whole time. And your client's outcome in a particular situation is really going to be dependent upon the manner in which you conduct yourself in the courtroom. So you have to make sure that you're a human being and that you're connecting with the judge, who's also a human being, or you're connecting with the jurors, who are human beings, and they want to like you if you give them the chance. And if you connect with them in a meaningful way and treat them respectfully, don't talk down to them, don't be arrogant. That's a key in jury work. They appreciate that. I find that people appreciate that. Treat them like the thoughtful adults that they are sitting there. They're giving their time. It's a public service to be a juror, and it takes a lot out of people's lives to do that. And so you have to make sure you acknowledge that when you're in the courtroom and respect them and respect their time.
What's been some of your, you know, what have been some of the highlights, I guess, of your courtroom work? Like when, and how do you feel afterward, I guess?
I always feel that I could have done a little bit better. I'm pretty self-critical. And sometimes it's hard because you don't get a decision or any feedback. Some judges are very good at giving you an indication of what they're thinking, and they're pretty transparent. Others are pretty staid and quiet and stoic. So you don't really know. You don't really know if you're going to get a good decision or a bad decision. But whenever I walk out of a courtroom, I always think about and assess what I could have done better to advocate for my client. And if I did something really well, I try to make a note of it so that I can make sure that I found something that's effective, where I connected with the judge or I connected with the jury in a meaningful way. I try to make sure that I keep that in my repertoire.
Now, I know you just said you don't get a lot of feedback from the judge, but I'm just curious, what's the biggest, most important compliment you've received?
When you make an argument to a judge and the judge then turns to the other side and says something like, you're not going to do better than that, or what do you say in response to Mr. Higgins? Because you can tell from the body language of the court that the judge agrees with you, and you know that you've got your opponent on their heels at that point. That's a good feeling to know that what you've come up with for a strategy and how you've advocated for your client has been effective and has resonated with your audience. That's the most rewarding thing.
You're doing your pro bono work. Is there any other project that you just haven't had time for yet? Or is there any other area of work that you're interested in kind of dipping into?
The great thing about the platform here at Bernstein Schur is I'm able to practice in a variety of fields where I want to. I don't have the rate pressure that I had at the big law firms. So I'm able to work with smaller businesses, which is really great because the outcome is so important to them. The outcome is important to the big companies, but they can absorb more of the ebb and flow of litigation, whereas our smaller clients here, the outcome of a particular situation might be the end of their business or whether their business survives. And that's really important work to me. And I'm getting to work with friends of mine that have businesses and have legal needs. And that's been incredibly rewarding, that I can really work for my friends and advocate for my friends, and that they trust me to do that is really a compliment. I'm really flattered that people have that much respect for what I do that they would ask me to help them. So I think there's not an area of practice where I feel like I want to go towards it and I haven't been able to. I think Bernstein's platform has allowed me to do that. And it's just continuing to work with really great people and entrepreneurs and people who have some really great ideas and really great businesses, and how I can sit down and just help them succeed is really a fantastic opportunity.
What do you say to a company that feels like, oh my gosh, we are up against it? And what do you say to them that they might want to pick up the phone and call you and say, look, let's examine it. Let's take a look at it.
So I have a reputation for being kind of unflappable. And I think it comes from playing sports. You know, I wanted the ball in the last possession. And I feel pressure, but I don't exude it. It doesn't manifest itself outwardly, really. So big events for companies in litigation or in business, they're very important, and the people feel it emotionally, right? Because it's their livelihood or it's something they've created, so it's really important to them. So I want to feel that too, but not to the point where it makes me emotional about the judgment that I'm trying to help them exercise. And so while I take the things that they bring to me very seriously, I try to make sure that I maintain the right perspective so I can give them counseling without the emotion. Because when someone's challenged in a business context or in litigation, they feel it. They feel it. They take it personally, right? And so it's my job to make sure that I keep emotion out of it so it doesn't affect my judgment or the counseling that I give them.
You enjoy what you do.
I do. I do. There are a lot of lawyers who, they make a face and they don't enjoy what they do, but I was in a cab the other day and the cab driver asked me, what do you do? I said, I'm an attorney. And he's like, oh, do you like that? I said, I do. I learn something new every single day. I learn something new every day about a new industry or a way to approach a problem or something from one of my colleagues. And it's great. It's really great. I mean, I'll walk out of here today and I'll talk to some of my colleagues and I'll learn something about them or their family or their practice and how it's evolving, or I'll learn something about it. I represent pharmaceutical companies, so I learn tons of science. The joke that I make is when I was in college, I probably couldn't have spelled science, but now I'm deposing cardiologists and experts and hydrogeology and cardiology, and it's funny to me that I have such a science-based practice now.
But it's all about learning, isn't it? It's all about continuing.
I love to read. I love to learn new things. When someone says, well, what about this? I'm always the person, I'm like, oh, well, let's look it up. Let's look it up. Let's get a book. Let's figure out the answer. It doesn't have to be a mystery. And it's the beauty of the internet age, right? We can mm-hmm. figure all this stuff out. And I love learning something new. I love teaching my kids something new, because I'm getting to relearn things that I have found to be really interesting. It's really fun. My daughter and I'm helping her learn all the presidents in order, and I'm relearning them all in order. That's really fun. And so I view my job a lot like that. It's fun. I get to do something new every day.
Lifelong learning, yes. Right here at Bernstein Share.
At Bernstein Share. It's great. Anybody who does listen to this, they should think strongly about moving to Portland, Maine. And if they want some advice on the city or to help find a job, they should call me.
I like it. I think you could open up a job placement company too on the side.
I mean, I strongly advocate for the quality of life that we have here in this fantastic little city. So
we're pretty lucky, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah,
we are. And every day when I walk around, I try to soak it in and remember just how fortunate I am.
Do you feel like you've tapped into the secret?
I don't understand why I'm this lucky, right? So I've gone and I've lived in big cities and I've had great experiences and I've worked at some really fabulous places with some really fabulous people. But I do try to remember every single day just how fortunate I am. I have a fantastic family. I live in a wonderful town. I work in a great city. I work with great, smart people. I'm very fortunate, and I try to make sure that I remember that every single day and be grateful.
So, Chad, if people do want to reach out to you, how can they connect with you?
Anybody who wants to connect with me can feel free to email me at chiggins@bernsteinsure.com or to give me a call at 207-228-7186.
Well, Chad Higgins, what a delight to have
you
here
much.
On the SureCast and to learn more about you. It's been great.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
I wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the SureCast, a Bernstein Sure podcast. We hope you have enjoyed the program. To find out more information about the topics discussed in this episode and more, please visit www.bernsteinsure.com/media. Thank you.